Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Today on Stick to Football, Top 5 Tuesdays, plus your draft on draft questions, and of course, $100 handshakes. Matt, Mello, Connor, it is great to be back with you guys after a fantastic weekend of college football. I don't know about you guys, but for me, it's like we're sitting here, it's Monday late morning, and what happened Saturday already feels like it was a week ago because the emotional roller coaster that I had to sit on this weekend as a Texas fan was tough. But it was amazing to have the SEC back out there, to have the Big 12 playing each other. And we got some pretty damn memorable games out of it, too.
Yeah, I think a lot of people are probably sitting there waiting like, hey, did Melo's heart survive this Saturday? It did. We lived to fight another Saturday, at least here in my part. It was great to sit down, watch the games for us here in the Central Time Zone at 11. And then usually, you know, I've gotten kind of used to like, oh, well, there's probably not a good game on again. Nope, just kidding. We had great games at every time slot on Saturday. Sunday brought some really good games as well. It's just so good to have football back. To sit here this morning, 65 degrees outside, football back. This is my season. This is Mello season.
I absolutely loved it. It felt like the first real Saturday where it's like your head starts to spin a little bit, actually. At one point, you're like, oh, shit. Like, I don't even know what I'm supposed to have on right now because some of the early games start to get away from you when they turn into blowouts. And then some of them, like Kansas State team, just make games that are supposed to be a blowout. It's an absolute problem. So it's a blast, and I'm so excited that finally on this show we really, really get to talk about it.
Yeah, and I think Miami just scored again, guys. 52-10 over Florida State. That was one where that's not like a shocking, like that's not, you're not surprised that Miami beat Florida State, but I think you're surprised that Miami beat Florida State by 42 points. And in doing so, it feels weird to say this, but Miami's back in the top 10, at least in the coaches' poll. And like they're getting some respect from the college football landscape, from the college football world. In the coaches poll, Miami is number 8. And also in the AP top 25, Miami moves up to number 8 in the coaches poll. Really, maybe that's the surprise out of the weekend. But Mello, your locksmith underdog game of the week, you picked Mississippi State to beat LSU. They do that. I was sitting with you Saturday. You were more excited that Mississippi State beat LSU than you were that Texas came back and won.
That's 100% true. Like, we were sitting at an old Chicago trying to watch every game that is on, and somebody turned the LSU game so that they could watch Arkansas. It's like, are you kidding me right now? Like, the super underdog locksmith game of the week is about to hit, and you're trying to change the channel on me? Get it back on the screen. I need to speak to a manager, full Karen mode on this. But I was very excited. I feel like I put my nuts on the table, and you know what? It paid off this time.
It might be time to actually bet your own money on these, Mello. At some point, this has to switch. It's not the I don't have the nuts to bet my own money on it, so you should bet yours. It might be, okay, I'm finally at the point where these are starting to hit. Let's throw some money on it.
Yeah, I'm going to have to slide you a text message or a Venmo and be like, Connor, put this down for me. We'll get something going on.
What we need to do is just get Manscaped to sponsor it. Just, it's nut cutting time. And like, give Mello a grand a weekend. Let him bet it. See what happens.
I'm down.
The nut cutting bet of the week. Done.
Right? Yeah, come on, Manscaped. This is easy. So that one was a surprise. This one should not have been, but kind of was, because Oklahoma got up 14-0. And even as Spencer Rattler was throwing interceptions, I was like, they're up 14-0. I know K-State beat them last year. Connor, we were in London watching that game a year ago if you want to get depressed. But it's like, man, no way K-State beats Oklahoma this year. There's no way. They don't have really any notable NFL prospects on K-State. Doesn't matter. That is one hell of a tough team. And they have OU's number. Spencer Rattler, I believe, 3 interceptions on the day. He did not look good. A lot of windows that he would normally be thrown through. K-State was getting their hands up. They were batting balls down. They were redirecting traffic, basically. OU loses. LSU loses. And in a year where we see 8-9 game schedules, those losses can effectively end your playoff hopes.
Oh, yeah. And like when you look back at this K-State team, I don't know if you guys saw this, but there were like reports that they were down like 7 players from their 2-deep roster. That they were just really almost rolling out a skeleton crew there. And this is coming off a loss to Arkansas State. Kansas State couldn't beat Arkansas State, but comes in whips Oklahoma. I did not see this happening. I've been on the Spencer Rattler train. I think I put him as my top Heisman guy. Then he comes out and throws some interceptions. One was tipped at the line of scrimmage, so I'll give him credit for that one. But to have this upset, again, like K-State has Oklahoma's number now. Good win by the Wildcats. It makes me very excited. I thought this Oklahoma team was very good. I thought they were kind of in control of their own destiny going into the college football playoff. But now they've got some work to do, and they've got to actually hope for some upsets. They have to beat Texas this year. They get Iowa State on the road this week. Like, that's going to be a tough win for Oklahoma and this young offense.
I mean, this is devastating, right, to Oklahoma. This Kansas State team, my goodness, they looked awful just a week ago when you go back and look at that game. And then you watch this, and it's like maybe they just played up to their opponent. I don't know. Maybe they have a different confidence from last year against Oklahoma, and momentum is a very real thing. But Oklahoma lost this game, right? Like, it wasn't necessarily constantly taken from them. They had the ball at the end where it's supposed to be, you know, arguably – the best offense or one of the best offenses in the country under Lincoln Riley and his young quarterback. And they quite frankly just shit the bed. So this is devastating. You know, we've seen plenty of teams come back from early season losses before and make the playoff, but correct me if I'm wrong, guys, I think this year is going to be a little different, a little harder to come back from those.
It absolutely is. And that segues perfectly to the other team in the Big 12. And it's well known Mello and I are Texas fans. And if you had told me that Texas was going to force 3 interceptions, 3 fumbles, block a punt, and Sam Ellinger was going to throw 5 touchdowns, and they would have to win this game in overtime, I would have laughed in your face. Even when they were up 10 at halftime, it was like, okay, they'll pull away in the second half. They didn't. Texas Tech did. Matt Wells has this team playing very well. Alan Bowman, 5 touchdowns. Yes, the 3 interceptions were really the difference in this game, but I don't know whose DBs are worse, the Texas Longhorns or the Dallas Cowboys, but it is a race that I would enjoy watching play out because they are both absolutely terrible right now. Ellinger, not that prolific in terms of yardage, just 262, but he leads the comeback and was so poised and clutch when he had to be. And again, 5 touchdowns to go on. He was already, I believe, leading college football in touchdown passes or was way up there. He now has 10 on the season.
Yeah, and he added another one on the ground too. This one was exciting, I guess. It pissed you off at the same time too. I think Texas was down, I was like 14 points at one point with 3 minutes left. I think the real changing moment of this game though is, fellas, don't throw the horns down. You want to piss off those boys over in Burnt Orange, put those horns down and see what happens. It doesn't work out for people. Ask all the West
Unless
Virginia
you're Baker
fans.
Mayfield. He's like the only guy who's ever gotten away with it.
Did he put the horns down?
It was after the game. He ran to the end zone.
Oh, yeah. Little punk did it after the game.
Right.
Did Cal win when Chad Hansen did it? Which is the funniest one. Out of all people, Chad Hansen did the horns down.
I think Cal did win that game.
Okay. I couldn't remember that one. That's the only like real horns down I remember, because when the Jets drafted him, everyone was like psyched that he had like some, like, you know, an attitude.
Little swag.
And he really never, he had none. He barely did anything with the Jets. So, it's a bad omen to put the horns down at this point.
We'll come back to get you.
Down 14 with 3:13 left, and you come back and win by 7. So I'm not ready to say they're back. I know a lot of people want to like make fun of it and be, oh, is Texas back? You have to beat Tech in overtime. I do think that's a game that a team can build on, though. And so TCU this coming weekend, we'll see if they continue to roll, but like maybe for the first time in a while, the Big 12 is competitive.
Yeah. Or really bad. It's hard to tell, but I do think that like with Texas, at least they kind of control their own destiny now. Like if you beat Oklahoma, if you just win out, and you should, you definitely should, then you're in the college football playoff. Like, I know that the Big Ten is coming back and the Pac-12, but if you win the Big 12 and you are Texas or Oklahoma, you go undefeated, you're going to be in the college football playoff. That's something that's exciting to say as a Texas fan. No, they're not back. Until they're like playing and winning conferences, playing for national championships, then I think we can say they're back. But it's very promising for this team that is not young anymore. They have a lot of veterans, obviously. Sam Ellinger has been there for 8 years now. I do think that they kind of control their own destiny. I think this is a team that can get into the college football playoff. And that's not a homer thing. I've been very realistic on the Longhorn expectations, but I think they can do it this year.
I think that's what, you know, as an outsider looking in, I think that's what makes you believe in Texas, is that they have a veteran leader at the quarterback spot. They have some of those same pieces on the offensive line. And when you, the secondary really, really needs to get it together, because that's a talented group that's underperforming. But when you have veteran leadership on the O-line and quarterback spot, you can win any game in college football.
Absolutely. And I will be a homer and say I hope it happens, because it would just be good to see. I also think, as a Royals fan and a Nuggets fan, you need a little something good
you
in
need
your life
something
every now and then, right? Right. How about some $100 handshakes? I would take one of those right now. Let's get it started here. Kyle Trask, 6 touchdowns on Saturday against Ole Miss. He was slinging that ball. And it's funny being on Twitter during a Florida game, because, like, I don't think anyone really respects Kyle Trask, like, in the college football environment, right? But I love the way he plays. We saw accuracy. He wisely gets the ball to Kyle Pitts a lot. We're going to talk about him more. He gets the ball out to Kadarius Toney. His Florida offense is so much fun to watch. And I'm very, very impressed with Kyle Trask's accuracy. And not just like, oh, they're playing Ole Miss, he's throwing guys open. Like, his ability to put the ball in tight spots. A lot of these passes, like, those were good balls. This was not him just throwing to wide open spaces all day. If you want to start like the Kyle Trask hype train, Saturday's a damn good way to do it. 30 of 42, 416 yards and 6 touchdowns.
Yeah, I was very impressed with him as well. And I think it's something we've been flirting with here on the podcast of, is Kyle Trask QB4? And I obviously, if he continues to even play closely to what he did against SEC opponents like he did on Saturday, this is a guy who, yes, he's going to be QB4. He's also going to be like first round guy. And, you know, pump the brakes a little bit. It's one game. We'll see what they can do next week. But he looked very good on Saturday. Another guy for me who's going to get my first $100 handshake, that's Breece Hall, the running back out of Iowa State. He's a redshirt sophomore who's been quietly leading this Iowa State team. I know that a lot of people want to talk about Brock Purdy, but this offense kind of goes as Breece Hall does. 18 carries, 155 yards, and 3 touchdowns on Saturday against a good TCU defense. Are they elite? No, but they're good, and Gary Patterson can get a defense ready to go anytime. So for him to do that at TCU on Saturday, that's one hell of a performance. He gets my $100.
I'm starting off with an obvious one here. Jalen Waddle, the wide receiver at Alabama, or basically the next guy up at Alabama. I mean, what a performance, right? This is somebody that didn't get to start last year because, I don't know if you heard, a couple of their wide receivers went in the first round that
pretty
played
good
over him. Yeah, pretty good. I mean, and Mac Jones had a really, really good game, an impressive game. And I know one of you guys is going to talk about that in a bit. But Waddle's somebody that can go out and make plays, and I just don't think anybody can run with him right now. That's what it looks like. Great at tracking the ball, super tough at the catch point, really good play speed. I mean, this is everything we had hoped for Jalen Waddle now, knowing he was stepping into that starting role, and it looks like he's basically just going to run away with it. And in this era of NFL wide receivers where guys under 6 foot are taken in the first round because they're just electric and the rules kind of protect them, Jalen Waddle is the next guy up and what looks to me like a top 15, top 20 kind of pick.
Yeah, and they didn't have to throw the ball very much, but my goodness, when they did, it was impressive. I mentioned him earlier, but my second $100 handshake, it's got to go to number 11, Sam Ellinger. The comeback win was impressive. The 5 touchdowns were impressive. Like you said, Melo, he added another on the ground. 6 touchdown day for Sam Ellinger. That'll get you $100.
Yep, and I'm going to go with Alabama quarterback, Mac Jones. I feel like Mac Jones was getting, not hate, but he definitely wasn't getting respect out of the SEC. This was a, Alabama's going to come in, have a very vanilla offense. But he did what he was supposed to, and that's get the ball to Jalen Waddle, let Najee Harris do his thing. I think that they were a little bit conservative, but I do think that Mac Jones is a guy who has some eligibility left, and we could be looking at as like a Senior Bowl guy going into what, like 2022. I think that he can be a player in this league. We'll see what happens. We'll see how they use him in this offense, but I do think that he's a lot more than just, hey, see Jaylen Waddle, throw it to Jaylen Waddle. Don't make any interceptions. He played well on Saturday. That Mizzou defense has guys like Nick Bolton. Google him if you haven't. But Mac Jones, 18 of 24, 249 yards and two touchdowns, taking care of business in the SEC. Bama looks legit still.
Man, the Nick Bolton joke will never get old. I really hope we get him on the. I really hope we get him on the show and just be like,
either
hey,
one,
you ever Google? You ever Google? Yeah. Maybe we get the the other one on and not tell anyone that it's the other one. Oh man, we really are ridiculous. All right, number two for me, another potential Senior Bowl guy here. Feels like he's been in college forever, constantly making spectacular catches, and that's TJ Vasher from Texas Tech. Now, I know they lost the game to the Horns, but this guy was the reason they were winning the game at one point. Two touchdowns for him, and it's really the way he does it. This guy is always making the most ridiculous one-handed catches or diving catches. If you liked Hakeem Butler in college, this is kind of the same guy, to be honest with you. And I know Hakeem Butler has not transitioned well to the NFL, and it will be interesting when we go through the scouting process of Vasher, but 6 foot six, ridiculous catch radius, constantly making plays, and it's a tough loss for Texas Tech, but a really, really nice week for Vasher.
I had an NFL quarterback shit-talking me during this game, and we started talking about Vasher, and it was like, he's just so long. It's like, just give him a chance. Like, just
give
put the ball somewhere in his orbit. He's going to go find it, and I swear to God, he did just that and caught a touchdown, like, right after I texted it, and was just like, God damn it. Like, don't do this against my team, though.
He might be a tight end.
Yeah,
honestly,
really.
At the next level. I know he's like 215 right now. You get him up to like 235, and he's a tight end.
This guy is a tight end. My last $100 handshake goes to Kyle Pitts, and he might not be a tight end in the NFL. I don't know what his position will be. It'll be playmaker. Get him the fucking football. 8 catches for 4 touchdowns on Saturday, and it was like, oh, he kind of got a slow start, and then in the second half, it was like, he was a magnet to the football. And wisely, Kyle Trask was like, you know what? Fuck it. I'm going to find my find 84, throw him the ball. And it worked very, very well because he had 8 catches, 4 touchdowns. And it was just physical play. You saw him doing things in space. I don't know exactly how fast he is, which is why it's like, where do you play him? He's kind of a flex guy. And you hope he doesn't like get that Evan Ingram, you know, kind of label, because Evan's not been that good the last couple of years. But Kyle Pitts is sure as hell fun to watch.
Yeah, and even like with Evan Ingram, he was fast, and he wasn't 6 foot six. So I think Kyle Pitts is going to be a different kind of guy, but he can't play inline tight end. I just don't think that's going to be his game. But put him out there outside in the slot. I guess we're calling him a tight end. Really, he's probably just a big-ass receiver, but I do like him. Great game. Last guy for me, I have to go back to that Mississippi State upset win. Anytime you throw for 623 yards, you should get that $100 handshake. 5 touchdowns. He did throw the 2 interceptions. But KJ Costello, coming into his first game with Mississippi State, playing at LSU in a new offense, throws for 623 yards, gets the upset win. $100 handshake to the guy formerly from Stanford.
Absolutely loved it. Was awesome to see Costello get that kind of win, put out that kind of performance. I mean, shit, somebody throwing for over 600 yards in the SEC, that is just, it's unbelievable to witness. Staying with the SEC here and staying with Florida, as you heard Matt talk about Kyle Pitts there, I'm going on the defensive side of the ball for the Gators here. A lot of Gators getting $100 bills this week after that performance. Ventrell Miller, the linebacker from Florida, this was his kind of breakout performance. When this guy comes downhill, it is like a Mack truck, the way he sticks people. Really good recognition, really good speed. I think we're looking for good linebackers this year, right? You know, obviously after Micah Parsons opts out, you're kind of looking at who's going to step up in this class. And for Ventrell Miller, this was a big day.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it was good to see our cousin, Miller, number 51, Ventrell Miller, making plays. Let's take a break. We come back, our top 5 takeaways. All right, it is time for our top 5 takeaways because it's Tuesday. And guys, I'm going to start us here. Sorry, Adam Lefko. You know, I love you so much, but Carson Wentz is broken. And I'm not ready to say he's washed. We're not going there yet. But he's broken, and it's interesting, like, just how much that offensive line in front of him, like, he doesn't look comfortable, and I don't think his receivers are good, but some of these throws are just bad. Like, they're on him. Like, you're overthrowing Miles Sanders. You can't blame your offensive lineman for that. You can't blame your receivers for that. at some point, Carson Wentz has to be take some of the blame. And I think we're seeing that even from the coaching staff. Doug Peterson was asked on Sunday night, have you thought about benching him? He's like, not yet. Can't go there. But six interceptions, the most in the NFL, a QBR of 35. That's not good. I don't quite understand QBR, but I know 35 is bad.
I don't understand how Carson Wentz has become so bad. And I know that, Matt, on a radio show, you have a bet with Big Country on him being a top five MVP performer.
I said he wouldn't be, by the way.
Right. But I still didn't expect this kind of drop-off. For him to play this poorly, I don't know if it's him looking over his shoulder at Jalen Hurts, being like, why'd you take this guy in the second round? But like, that's the only thing I can point my finger to. I know the offensive line's bad, but the throws just aren't there. One of my big takeaways, I'll keep it with the NFC East. Dwayne Haskins, not good. Daniel Jones, not good. It might be time for both of these franchises to just look and say, you know what? We messed up. And if you have a guy like Justin Fields or Trey Lance sitting there when you pick, I don't think that they'll be in the Trevor Lawrence area. But if you have one of these top three quarterbacks and you can pull the trigger on them, you might want to go ahead and explore that, because guys like this don't come around too often. And Daniel Jones and Dwayne Haskins, they're not even comparable to these other guys that they're in the draft right now. So if Washington or if New York can get their hands on one of these top quarterbacks, they definitely need to explore.
I just, when I look at them, especially Daniel Jones, let's start with him. It's really like a Jameis situation at this point, right? Where we're falling for the really good plays. And this happens with Darnold, too, to be fair. The really good plays. Yep. But you can't win with those kind of turnovers. You simply can't. And I think at Haskins, you know, the line's bad, but he's been bad, too. He's missing throws. I don't know. It's going to be really interesting with a lot of these young quarterbacks in the league. Teams are going to have to make the decision to pull the plug what's considered early, which would be Darnold, Jones, Haskins, but it might save their franchise, as we saw it do with Arizona. All right, my first one here. Kyle Shanahan grows stronger as the 49ers get weaker. It's really a sight to watch. I mean, how many injuries has this team gone through at this point? And they got like the third or fourth string tight end out there going for five catches for 50 yards. Nick Mullins making good throws. The play calling is just phenomenal. They didn't even need Jerick McKinnon to play the entire game, and he's like their third string option at running back. So it was if you're looking just for an offensive play caller in his zone, knowing he's working with less and adjusting to his personnel and going out and walloping another team with his backups, watch what Kyle Shanahan did against the New York Giants on Sunday.
It was, and I know the Giants are bad, and we're going to hear that, like, from Giants fans, be like, hey, we're really bad. But also, like you said, Connor, like, what team would be without their starting quarterback, their top two running backs, their top receiver, their top tight end, their two starting corners, one of the best pass rushers in the game, and his backup, and win by this amount? Like, that's how many players they had hurt. It's crazy to me. I think Kyle Shanahan, it's weird because the perception of him is not the reality, because people are like, oh my God, this is like offensive genius. That part is true, but it's the run game. And it's the window dressing of this offense with pre-snap motion, the way that the runs look like the passes and the passes look like the runs. And it is beautiful. Like, as a football nerd, that offense is porn. Like, it's all day. Like, Game Pass is Pornhub. Like, just watch it and enjoy it, because it is beautiful to see, and you have to give him a lot of credit. A team that hurt to play that well, and you know, next week they get the Eagles. They might just roll over that team as well. Then they get the Dolphins. So until week six, when they get the Rams, like, we might see them have kind of a comfortable schedule where they could be 4-1 headed into week six because of Kyle Shanahan. So he's done a hell of a job. How about this one, fellas? And this for me. Like, we don't get a lot of opportunities to pat ourselves on the back, because we don't do that here. More often than not, we're going to make fun about things that we get wrong, like having Sam Darnold as your QB1. But this guy was my QB2 and a player I took so much shit for. So I just want to enjoy it this season. Josh Allen's playing like an MVP candidate. And week one, it was like, is this real? Like, or is this, are they playing a bad team? And then week two, it was like, I think it might be real. And then yesterday against the LA Rams, it was like, oh, man. And there were moments, especially in the fourth quarter, where his offensive line may have like almost got him killed. And he's like, he's still reckless to some degree, but I feel like he's dialed that in, you know, and like the recklessness like almost works. Like there was a play where he was running and about to get tackled and he tried to pitch the ball to his receiver. If the receiver had been paying attention, he would have scored a touchdown. It's like the recklessness is there and it might bite him in the ass at some point. But Josh Allen, like to me, like it's Russell Wilson and then it might be Josh Allen in terms of this MVP debate right now. We'll see what Mahomes and Lamar Jackson do on Monday night as we're sitting here Monday morning. But Josh Allen is up there as an MVP candidate. And I don't know anyone who credibly thought that 3 weeks ago, so I'm here to enjoy it.
Not me, that's for damn sure. With Josh Allen, I agree with you with the recklessness. It's like baby Brett Favre. Like, he's going to do some shit that's going to win you some games. He's also probably going to do some stuff to lose you some games. Like, him escaping that sack, and I know that he got the face mask call, but, like, Aaron Donald was in on that. And Josh Allen somehow figured out a way to escape and chuck the ball down the field. It's great to see him kind of progress. I love the way he plays. I know that I said he wouldn't be a top 10 pick. I don't even remember. I think I had him like QB4 in that class, but it's nice to see him progress. I like to watch him play. I like the Buffalo Bills, but one thing I like better than the Buffalo Bills and the NFL is college football. It feels so good to have college football back, and that's why I'm declaring college football is better than the NFL, and no, you cannot change my mind. Waking up super early, watching the pregame shows, getting the noon kickoff for those of you on the East Coast, and then just bleeding that over into a night or a full day of watching football, there's nothing better than that, and it happens on Saturdays.
I'm going to stay right there with college football, and one of the many reasons it's so great. How about Mike Leach? Mike Leach is good. Yeah. For the SEC. And listen, maybe it's a one-game wonder. Who knows? But I'll tell you right now, even if it is, it's one hell of a one-game wonder. There were a lot of doubters of how this offense would work in the SEC. You know, could a team really go out and bring a guy like Mike Leach over from the West Coast into the SEC? Are they just going to get blown out? Is it a gimmick? Is it going to work? I mean, fuck all of that. This was hilarious to watch. And I like LSU, but let's be real. I mean, what this offense did was flat out ridiculous. And if you're a team that's getting ready to play Mississippi State in this Mike Leach offense, you have to be scared right now. Absolutely. It's a big adjustment from what you're used to preparing for. So I don't know. I really enjoyed watching this. And I know this hire had a lot of doubters. And it's just going to be a ton of fun to watch Mike Leach now in the SEC. What a crazy conference this has become with some of these new hires.
I had no idea how it would work. Like, Mike Leach's offense works, right? We've seen it work at Tech. We've seen it work at Washington State. It works. Now you give him SEC athletes, Kylan Hill and Osiris Mitchell. Those dudes went off against LSU as receivers for Kylan Hill, not as a running back, as a receiver. He was making plays. So love that call. How about this one? My third takeaway, New York City teams, they got big problems at quarterback. The Bills are fine. The New York City teams, big problems. I know Connor was talking about it earlier, and Mello, you both were actually, but man, I'm worried. And Sam Darnold, one of my favorite things about Sam at USC and then even early in his pro career was like, you couldn't really rattle him. Like, I remember watching him come back against Texas or the Rose Bowl against Penn State, and you're just like, this kid is tough. I was watching his press conference yesterday. He looks broken. Like, he just looks defeated right now. And I don't know how he could have any faith in his offense with, you know, the lack of weapons. The play calling is absolutely terrible. He looks broken. And Daniel Jones maybe hasn't realized that he's bad yet, but he is. And like, you could definitely find me like a tweet that somebody sent of a good throw he made. But man, tell the whole story of his game, and it's bad. His fumbles, his interceptions. You just can't trust him to not turn the ball over. So we might be looking at, it's early, but man, like you guys said, if you're up there, if you're in Trevor Lawrence territory, you got to take him. And if you're in Trey Lance territory, I think you got to take him too. And now that Justin Fields has found plants and is 12 pounds lighter, you might want to think about him too. Like, there are three quarterbacks in this class who know I wouldn't have them rated higher than where I had Darnold. Well, maybe a couple of them. But I loved Darnold. I think some of those guys might have graded higher. I did not love Daniel Jones. All of them will grade higher. But how often are you in position to truly draft a franchise quarterback? And, like, the writing's on the wall with these guys. I'm not giving up on their careers. This might be a Ryan Tannehill thing where they need to go somewhere else and try again. But how many guys bounce back from just a complete, like, mental ass-kicking early in their careers? Like, they're being David Card. It doesn't happen. You don't bounce back from that.
Yeah, and I think, like, take a page from the Arizona Cardinals. Like, look at it and say, you know what? This isn't working early. let's not tie ourselves to this quarterback just because we drafted him high. Let's move on and get something that's better for our franchise. I think we all hate to see it. You want to see all these guys be successful. So it's not like we hate the Washington football team or the New York Giants. Clearly, we don't hate the New York Jets on this podcast. But these are teams, and you know, throw the Cleveland Browns in there too. Could be looking for a quarterback change with a very good quarterback class. I'm going to take us back to college football, though. Alabama really impressed me, and this was a team that I know is ranked very high, but I think this is going to be an electric offense still. Mac Jones got my $100 handshake. These receivers, watching Jalen Waddle, got Connor's $100 handshake. There's so much talent there. With Jalen Waddle buried on the depth chart last year, we barely got to see him. Everybody knew he was going to be good. The running backs, though, Najee Harris, Brian Robinson Jr., Trey Sanders, when he gets going, I think he's going to be really good. This defense is lights out. This Missouri team that they beat up on is pretty good. And if it weren't for two late touchdowns in the fourth quarter, this game was just absolutely out of hand. The backups and the scrubs came in, and Missouri could still barely keep pace with Alabama. So my big takeaway, Alabama is still Alabama. And I know a lot of people were looking at LSU, Georgia, Florida. They're still the top dog in the SEC, and they're going to be for as long as Nick Saban's there.
Let's take it back to the quarterback talk here. And number three for me, and I know this is a take that's all over the place. Some people think he's overrated. Some people think he's underrated. Some people just don't really care anymore. I really think Matt Stafford is an underrated player that I would like to see have a big second half of his career. And I don't know if that's necessarily going to be in Detroit. I'm curious what direction the Lions want to go in when presumably they move on from Matt Patricia. Maybe they even find a new front office. I just look at this team and I go, man, Stafford's just a guy that has not always had a ton of help from this franchise. Kenny Golladay comes back on Sunday and they beat Arizona, and it makes a difference. And you watch Stafford play and I just look at it and go, man, you have to wonder if he went somewhere else, would this be a player that we talk about in a much better light? So it's interesting to me. We've been talking about the top teams that are in the sweepstakes for Trevor Lawrence, and we knew if the Lions were that team that they would take a quarterback, even though Stafford's not a bad player. I think they're out of that conversation. I think he's somebody that on his talent alone is going to win you enough games where you're not in the conversation for a top three pick. But man, they are at a crossroads where the next hires they make, and I hope they go down the road and look at that 49ers staff for some of those hires on either side of the ball, offensive or defensive. But I look at this Lions team and go, man, you got to get it in the right direction for this guy. He's 32 years old. The clock is starting to tick. You got good years left, but you watch him play and you just go, man, if he has more. And even on the defensive side of the ball, it's not always just the offense, because they do have good receivers. They draft on the offensive line, but the coaching is a problem as well. Man, I just want to see Matt Stafford finally get a real chance at playing for a good team.
He is one of those players, like, you love the way he plays. He's just never had anything to work with. And like, he deserves better. He's, what, 32 years old, I think? So
yeah, he is.
Guy deserves better. I promise I'm not trying to just kick the New York Jets while they're down today, but we saw Chris Mortensen report on Sunday that Adam Gase would be under more scrutiny in week three, even in light of the number of injuries the team had. Well, they got blown out again, and it was as bad as ever by the Indianapolis Colts this time. I look at the Jets and the Falcons, and I like Dan Quinn. Like, I actually think Dan Quinn is a pretty good coach, but I think it's a time for a change of scenery there. Like, maybe what he's, whether it's the message or like, it's just gotten a little bit stale. And honestly, since Kyle Shanahan left, they haven't been the same. Like, it's almost like their Super Bowl hangover is like mine was on Sunday. It's 3 years long. Like, they're still hungover from this game that they lost in epic fashion. So I look at the Jets, I look at the Falcons. You maybe could throw the Lions in here, even though they won on Sunday. Those are teams that, like, you might want to get a jump on calling whomever these top candidates are. You might want to get a call to Robert Saleh. You might want to get a call to Eric Bieniemy. It's never too early. And I know we've talked about this before, like, well, who takes over? Well, the Jets offensive staff, it's not structured well to a midseason fire. It's really not. But like, anything has to be better than what you have. And I think you have to look at the damage that you're doing to the psyche of your team. It's like, you fire your coach, you're not firing your team. You still have that core group is there. What message are you sending to your leadership and the players that, hey, like, we're okay with this. We're okay with underperforming week in and week out. Like, is that how you want you know, Mekhi Becton and Marcus May to look at this team and be like, well, we're okay losing. I mean, Jamal Adams ran his way out of town because of that. Now do you want Julio and Grady Jarrett thinking like this team doesn't give a shit if we lose? So I think it's time. I always hate for people to call for people to be fired. It's like, that's their job, right? We don't want somebody saying we should be fired, but I think it's time for some turnover there.
Yeah. And I would agree with you. And it does suck because I do like Dan Quinn and the other guy I don't really care for. But with Dan Quinn, right, I think a lot of people will look at that Atlanta job and be like, oh, God, this is the job. When the jobs that we expect to come open, the Falcons, the Jets, maybe even the Lions, the Falcons are the top there with Julio and Matt Ryan and a lot of pieces to work with. The offensive line's been very much improved. I think that we do see Dan Quinn maybe even get the first firing, and it sucks for him. He's going to land on his feet and be a great defensive coordinator if he doesn't land another head coach offering. But Connor, I do want to throw this one to you before I move on. How long do you think we see Adam Gase there in New York?
Man, if they lose Thursday night, I bet he's fired on Friday.
Week four in the NFL. But it's deserved. So yeah. I'm not saying you're wrong, but that's crazy.
I think Jets fans, Connor, again, you can speak to this, are going to be super ecstatic when he gets fired.
Yes. Yes. Jets fans didn't want him back this year. Jets fans didn't want him in the first place. I think the thing that makes it so confusing is you have the owner come out after week one's embarrassment and vouch for him. So then are you going to fire him 3 weeks later? But I really think they've cornered themselves where, like, the Jets aren't a competitive football team in the NFL right now. They are not even competing. So you have a point where it's like, man, it's like Greg Williams is going to be doing the Browns thing again, right? He'll be the interim coach. And Jim Bob Cooter is going to be calling the plays probably at some point this year. It's remarkable that it has come to this for the Jets, but it's not surprising at all. It's crazy he even got this year, honestly.
Yeah. All right, fellas, I'll take it back here. College football again. I'm very excited because I think the college football playoff is now wide open with the Oklahoma loss. And we talked about Texas earlier. I think that they can, but as a Texas fan, they also find a way to shit the bed usually. I think that leaves teams like Florida open to get a shot in the college football playoff. I think Georgia and LSU, a little bit overrated. LSU obviously lost. I don't think that they're going to control that. I think we could see a Pac-12 team actually play and get in. I think Ohio State, Clemson, probably Alabama, shoe-ins to make the college football playoff. But then after that, like Notre Dame in the SEC, or sorry, the ACC, could get a nod. Like they're going to lose to Clemson. That's probably it, though. So I'm very excited to see what happens at the end of this year when we're looking at the college football playoff. And I'm also pretty excited for the chaos that's going to come if we do see a school like a USC or Arizona State run the table in the Pac-12, but they've only played 7 games. The people are going to be pissed off, and I'm here for it. I think it's going to be a very exciting year for the college football playoff and just college football in general.
The people are going to be pissed off should be the slogan for this year's CFP playoff. Slogan
for this fucking podcast.
All right, number 4 for me on the list. I'm asking the question. I don't know the answer right now. Are the Chicago Bears a problem right now? I mean, you got Nick Foles in there. You got some momentum going. I think the defense has played very, very well. I know everyone's laughing and saying they're the worst 3-0 team in football. They were saying the worst 2-0 team in football. At some point, are the Bears just going to be like 6-0, and we're like, hey, they still stink? Like, I don't think they do. I think Nick Foles can give them the life they need, and the defense is more than good enough where you got to ask yourself at some point, like, are the Bears going to be an issue for some teams this year? Did we just completely whiff on them because we assumed they would die down this Trubisky rabbit hole for too long? They pulled the plug a lot earlier than I expected. I know they have a really tough matchup with the Colts, who might have the best defense in football at the moment, and then they get the Bucks. So two tough weeks here for the Bears, but we're going to find out the answer to this question, and I'm kind of excited to watch Nick Foles lead this team now.
I think, like, even with Nick Foles, it's like just having that confidence, like your team having the confidence in the quarterback matters so much. Like Allen Robinson, Anthony Miller, like those guys being confident in who's back there, that matters. Even with his like Jim McMahon visor that he's rocking, which I kind of here for it, I think that will make a big, big difference. And as you said, I think Kyle Fuller's trash, but I do think that defense is very good. And I say that because I don't know if y'all saw, he got blocked all the way down the field on a play early in that game. And it's like, dude, come on. Like, it was a screen pass. You can't be doing that. All right, my final top 5 takeaway is Dan Mullen is a legit NFL head coaching candidate. And we haven't seen a lot of college guys jump. Matt Rhule makes the jump, got his first win on Sunday. Congratulations. I think Dan Mullen is next. And we can look at his offenses. Like, every stop of the way, Dan Mullen's offenses have been good. You even go back to the time that he was a coordinator. Dan Mullen is a legit NFL coaching candidate. It might be another year unless Florida somehow like rolls to a natty. And this is a top, what, four team now? So I would not be surprised if that happens. But, you know, it's a younger guy. He's an offensive mastermind. He understands quarterback position, wide receiver position. He's worked under Urban Meyer. I think a lot of those elements translate to what we're seeing in the NFL now with so much motion, more spread elements. You know, just, hey, let's just get the ball in space. Quarterbacks running the ball around a little bit. So if you're looking for like an outside-the-box head coach hire, look at Dan Mullen.
Yeah, I would agree with you too. And one thing that we talk about with guys going from the college ranks to the NFL, you can't be a recruiter. You don't have to do that in the NFL. You've got to be a schemer, and I do think that's what Dan Mullen is, and I'll be excited to see what happens. Obviously, we're going to see a lot of coaching vacancies this year in the NFL, and I do think that with Florida making a run this year, maybe he could be a guy that opts to go to the NFL ranks. For me, guys, I got to talk about this Bengals and Eagles game. I know that they were given a tie. That just, the end of that game pissed me off so much. Both these teams need to be awarded a loss. When you punt and like run the ball, you run like a draw play to end it. Like, what happened to the old Herm Edwards? You play to win the game. Like, kick the 64-yard field goal or whatever it is. Throw a Hail Mary pass with 9 seconds. Whatever it is, go try to win this football game. I can't imagine being in that locker room when your coach isn't trying to win. When you're playing for a tie would piss me off as a player. And I think that both coaches maybe not lost the locker room on Sunday, but they definitely hurt their chances. And with Doug Peterson, like, he might have actually lost the locker room on Sunday. It would be very hard for me to go and play for a coach that isn't trying to win games.
Yeah, they don't want to win, or they didn't look like they wanted to win. And all I ask from a coach now in the NFL is stop running on second and long, stop punting in the fourth quarter when you're down 2+ scores, and just try to win. Like Melo said, what is going on in the NFL? It's everyone's playing such a safe way, right? They're almost playing to not be embarrassed. They're playing scared. It's like an epidemic around the NFL right now. And you're going to see the aggressive teams be the ones that come out on top at the end of this year. My last one here, and it's kind of funny because we killed the Packers for not drafting a wide receiver. I still think they should have taken a wide receiver. But Alan Lazard is a baller, guys. I mean, this dude is awesome. No Davante Adams, no problem. Lazard has a huge game on Sunday Night Football. It's very clear Aaron Rodgers believes in him. And what a career it's been for this guy. I mean, 4-star recruit that went to Iowa State because that's where his family went. I think his dad and his brother played there. So he passed over going to a Notre Dame or a Cal or an Iowa. And he has 4 productive seasons at Iowa State. Doesn't get drafted. Doesn't make the Jaguars team. He gets cut after his first training camp and revives his career with the Packers. I mean, this dude is looking like a legit number 2 wide receiver for them. Has all the trust and confidence from Aaron Rodgers. And quite frankly, that's all you need. So good for Green Bay. We had Lazard on at the Super Bowl. He's an awesome interview, such a down-to-earth, humble kind of guy, and it's fun to see his success right now.
No, it absolutely is, man. And it's just fun seeing guys like pop out. That's what I love about Sundays. It's like guys that we scouted, and then you see them make plays and like outpace the expectations. That's what it is all about. All right, let's take one more break, and we'll do some draft on draft. Crack open that beer or chocolate milk, depending on what time it is. Don't mix them. It's draft on draft time. And fellas, Garrett Greenlee, long-suffering Minnesota Vikings fan, wants to know, do you think it's possible the message in Minnesota has gotten stale with Mike Zimmer as the coach? So Garrett, man, I actually do think that that's a possibility because he's been there a while, kind of an older guy. Like, where's the energy? You know, and we were talking about Gary Kubiak earlier. Like, I really thought, off air, we were talking about it. I really thought that like, it would be seamless going from Kevin Stefanski to Gary Kubiak. It really hasn't. And, you know, Connor even said, like, in our little conversation, was like, did Danielle Hunter mean this much? But, and to me, it's like, think of all the DBs they lost. And like, those guys weren't necessarily good, like Xavier Rhodes, Trey Waynes. But, like, how much is their energy missing right now? I can't look at this team and figure out why they're as bad as they are. Other than Kirk Cousins is going through one of his patented streaks where it's like he's just turning the ball over. But like Justin Jefferson's going off. Adam Thielen's going off. Dalvin Cook had a great day Sunday. And like, and they still lose. So I don't know like how stale it is, because like I think Mike Zimmer's a hell of a coach, but they got to try something different than what they're doing right now.
Yeah, and one thing I added, like how important was Kevin Stefanski to this offense? But I don't know. Like I literally can't figure it out. This is a team I thought was going to be very good this year. I predicted them to win the North.
Same.
And then even after week one, I was like, well, they kind of look like shit, but it was the Packers. So maybe the Packers are legit. But then you lose to the Colts, and the Titans game was close, but it's still a loss. You're still sitting there 0-3. It's going to be tough. And, you know, I saw it this week, and I don't know if you guys did. A lot of Vikings fans doing the jersey swap already with Trevor Lawrence, being like, ooh, let's just get him in here. Buddy, you got a bad contract with Kirk Cousins that you're not getting away from.
You can't move him.
No, you can't. Like, you're stuck with this for the next, what is it, like 4 or 5 years? Good luck in Minnesota.
Yeah, so he has 2 more years after this one on the deal, but there's so much guaranteed money in it that it's not, you're not moving on from Kirk Cousins. So, I mean, listen, they're not going to be bad enough to get Trevor Lawrence. Let's just get that out of the way. Danielle Hunter's coming back, and you have to realize this is a transition period for Minnesota. You lost Stephon Diggs. Look how great he's been for Buffalo. He's a good player. Justin Jefferson had a really nice weekend. It's going to take time to get this offense fully clicking again. I mean, they haven't played the easiest defenses. I think they are what a lot of us thought, you know, over summer. They're kind of this middle of the pack team. They're not going to be I just don't think they're going to be picking top five. But to answer Garrett's question, it's possible. Zim's a tough coach, man. And tough coaches wear people out. I mean, you remember Jim Harbaugh in San Francisco, how good that team was? It wore people out. It happens. It just happens over time. And with Minnesota, they can probably afford a bad year, you know, like a 6-10, 7-9 kind of year, and Zimmer gets brought back. But you do have to wonder, you know, what is the biggest issue right now?
Yeah, that's one I do feel like they're going to, like, they might make the playoffs still. Like, they just seem like they are set to go on a run. Dakota Cox asked, there are 8 winless teams. How many of them would pass on Trevor Lawrence if they got the first pick? So those teams are Atlanta, Denver, Houston, Minnesota, the Giants, the Jets, the Bengals, the Eagles. So the teams that would pass, here's my prediction. The Falcons would pass. Matt Ryan's still good. He's not the problem. The Texans would pass because of Deshaun Watson. And the Bengals would pass because Joe Burrow. Everyone else should draft him. And I include the Philadelphia Eagles in that with Carson Wentz's interceptions. I think you have to. Like, the Jets and Giants definitely have to. And even like we were saying, you can't get rid of Kirk Cousins. You can bench his ass if you have Trevor Lawrence.
Yeah, you can pay him on that rookie deal. I don't think there are a lot of teams. I think the Houston Texans are probably the team, and the Cincinnati Bengals. Like, you already have your great quarterbacks there. I think even the Falcons, we're talking about Dan Quinn. What if they just went full rebuild and said, you know what, new head coach, new quarterback. I don't know if they can find a way to move that contract from Matt Ryan. I'm not saying that they will, but what if they did explore it? And can you imagine the King's ransom you can get for a guy like Matt Ryan?
Matt Ryan will be 36 after this season.
Right. So, I mean, this is also, take him then. This is a league where we saw Peyton Manning get moved when the Colts had the first overall pick. So to have a guy like Matt Ryan or Carson Wentz, if you have that first pick and you can get your guy who's 22 years old, yeah, I think you roll the dice on it. So that's why I'm saying Texans and Bengals are the only two teams.
Yeah, same. I'm with you on that. Joe Burrow is not going anywhere. Deshaun Watson's not going anywhere. With Matt Ryan, it's not level of play. It's age. It's simply age. When you look at the one that fascinates me, I mean, truly fascinates me, because, and it's not the Jets. A lot of people ask me all the time, how could you give up on Sam? He hasn't had anything. A new coach is coming in. If you're picking number one, the new coach is going to want Trevor Lawrence. Maybe Sam Darnold is great in Pittsburgh or wherever it may be. I'm just letting you know that's what's going to happen. Is the New York Giants, because there's been bright spots of Daniel Jones. I'm not a believer. I never have been. Everybody is well aware of that. But this is also a stubborn franchise, right? An old school franchise where, and their line is not much better. Like, if they're picking number one, do they take Penei Sewell? Do they trade the pick so they can get more linemen? I would take Trevor Lawrence if the draft was today, if I was the New York Giants, but I do think they're the one that it's not cut and dried.
Did you guys know Matt Ryan's wife's name is Sarah Marshall?
Really? People forget that.
People do. Damn it, Mello.
Wow. They really do.
Dan Owens asks, is a tie better or worse than a loss?
Man, like I was saying earlier, I almost think it's worse. When you look at the way these teams lost, or tied, sorry, if they would have tried kicking the field goal at the end of the game and they missed and they lost for that, at least you're going out on your shield. But, or the Bengals even. Like, I know there wasn't much time left on the clock, but still, like, try for something. Don't just run up the middle and then let the clock expire. So I do think in this situation, a tie is worse than a loss. And in the NFL standings, like, they're looking at number of wins. So I think it is worse.
It doesn't feel good. Like, it can't feel good. I don't know. I guess in the end, it could help you more than a loss, but I don't know how you walk away from that game. The Bengals fans are probably a little bit more patient because it's like, you know, they're rebuilding. It's what you have a young quarterback. Your offensive line is horrendous. So you like to see the team compete. If you're an Eagles fan, you have to feel miserable with what you've watched so far. So for the Eagles side of it, to me, it's worse because if the Eagles just kept losing, you start to get to the point where you're like, man, are we going to be blowing this thing up at the end of the year? It's hard to even have those words come out of my mouth with
right.
Doug Peterson and Carson Wentz. I like both of them a lot. Yeah. But I'm just saying, it's like you almost would rather things go nuclear when they go bad, like the Jets.
Yeah. Hunter Brown asked, is Josh Allen legit and what's different about his game this year? We kind of touched on this earlier. He is legit. He's an MVP candidate. He's tearing it up this year. What's different? We were talking about this yesterday, Mello. I think what's different is just he looks so much more comfortable. And I was speaking to someone last week about Josh Allen, and they were like, you know what? He's not thinking as much. He's not analyzing. And I think that also, like, that pressure's gone. Like, they made the playoffs last year, and yes, they lost, but that pressure's gone. Like, he's not looking over his shoulder like Sam Darnold. This isn't a Josh Rosen or Baker Mayfield situation. He knows he's the guy. And I think that familiarity helps. It's also, you know, you're in what, year four? I think that helps a lot too. Just he's more comfortable. He's 24 years old now. He's more comfortable in this offense. And I think giving him Stephon Diggs really, really helps a lot as well.
Yeah, just another year. Like you always see it with these guys. At the quarterback position, the game literally slows down. Everyone's not moving so fast anymore. So the game slows down and you're able to have more success in the NFL. I think that's what we're seeing with Josh Allen. Maybe it took a little while. This is honestly, like, out of Wyoming, he probably should have sat for a year like Pat Mahomes did. He didn't get that opportunity. He was kind of thrown to the wolves, but they're building around him. Offensive line's looking good. They're bringing in running backs to help. They're bringing in Stephon Diggs at receiver. I think this, just look at the franchise. Everything they're doing for Josh Allen is they're doing it the right way, and it's working out. So, yeah, I do think he's legit. And obviously, I've had my questions about him before.
Yeah, I mean, I look at it, it's command and poise, comfort of the offense. Brian Daboll is, you know, maybe the hot hand, the best offensive coordinator in football at this moment. And I think for Josh, it's, you know, he's worked on a lot of things. He looks a lot more comfortable. The pass protection, I know Aaron Donald had his day, but overall, for the last year, the Bills' pass protection has been good. And I think when you look at it, it's just the perfect combination of everything clicking. So for Josh, all the things that make him a really exciting player, his athleticism, his cannon of an arm, those things are still there. But it's, you know, his processing clock is matching up with all of those things. And it's really, really exciting to watch. I think that game-winning drive, while I thought the pass interference call was horrendous, you know, that's not on Josh Allen. Josh Allen had an incredible performance on that game-winning drive. His ability to move out of the pocket, to move the pocket, you know, how much accurate he looks while throwing that fastball. He really has come such a long way from his Wyoming days.
He really has. And it's fun to see a quarterback in an offense where they're like, hey, here's what you're good at. Let's go do that. Like, let's move the pocket. Let's throw the ball down the field. It's not rocket science. It's really not. Like, hey, what are you good at? Cool. Let's build an offense around that.
Yeah, look at New England and how they've changed their entire team. Like, right? What does the quarterback do that's good? All right, let's put him in a position to use his skills.
I don't know why people overthink this so much or why we're not running a team. As smart as we are, listen to us. Why aren't we running a team? Come on, Giants, make it happen. Living in Hoboken,
short drive
the Giants,
to work for me.
Right?
Yeah, right. I was going to say,
oh,
no problem.
God. Yeah, I mean, I would need to like come home back to Missouri quite often, but I think you can afford that when you're a GM. So
Easily.
Flights are cheap right now. Brian,
team plane?
Oh, yeah. There we go.
Now helicopter, just like Eli Manning.
Yeah, right. Brian Goodwin said, is Nick Mullins the future at quarterback in San Francisco? Brian, I want him to be badly, but no, I don't think so. It does, to me, highlight that with Kyle Shanahan as your coach and coordinator, like, you don't need a great quarterback. Now, when you have one, you get a Matt Ryan type season, right? Where MVP type year, run all the way to Super Bowl. But like, the drop off from Garoppolo to Mullins in limited reps hasn't looked to be that great. It's not $26 million different, which is what the pay difference is. So I think if you're a 49ers fan, you look at it and be like, you know, how much of this is Jimmy? I'm one of those people that says not much of it is. I think a lot of it is, again, what do you do well? You're accurate on underneath. You get the ball out quickly. You can move around a little bit. They're just putting him in situations to win. I'll tell you this. When Brandon Ayuk and Deebo Samuel are on the field together healthy, they're going to be a problem for people, though.
Yeah, and I think that is just Kyle Shanahan. I really do think he's a great coach in the NFL. Is Dan Mullins the future at quarterback? No, but I think he's going to be there for a minute. And if you're a 49ers fan, you can at least be like, man, we got a guy at backup quarterback that can come in. And if Jimmy Garoppolo is hurt, drop-off's not that far. So is he the future? No, but I think with Kyle Shanahan, you never need to like draft skill positions. I know they've spent some draft picks on receivers, like running backs, tight ends. Load up on defense, get a good offensive line, and Kyle Shanahan will find a way to score points in the NFL.
It's true. I mean, you saw all you needed to yesterday, that example of it. So, no, Nick Mullins isn't the future star. I think Shanahan almost enjoys, like, hey, I got this undrafted quarterback.
Right.
And I'm going to call plays that'll do laps around you. Like, he probably likes Nick Mullins. And to be fair, Mullins does have a skill set that, you know, does a lot of things well that Shanahan likes, especially moving the pocket. So I think when you look at it, he's not the future. I'm fascinated to see what the future is for the Niners, right? Like, maybe there is a way. I don't know. If Minnesota really does start to lose, like, would the Niners trade for Kirk Cousins, or is that just insane? I think that cap hit's too big.
Well, when we were talking about Matt Ryan earlier, that's why I was like, man, I don't want to say it because I say it every show, but like, if Kyle can get Matt Ryan back, come on. Like, let's go. You have to. You have to try.
I mean, we did the Aaron Rodgers thing for a while. Green Bay would be insane to move on from him after this year. I don't know. It's the Niners are going to have options. Something's going to shake free. Stafford? What about that?
Now I'm just getting excited. So I'm glad we only have one more question.
Light at the end of the tunnel.
I'm just going to go think about these things all day. Anthony Harrison asked, who are you guys rolling with in the NBA Finals? Heat versus Lakers. I saw someone tweet this morning, and it's so true. Like, the 1 year that you get a matchup, it's like it's Miami, it's South Beach against LA, and we're all stuck in our fucking houses.
It's awful.
Right? Like, Cleveland, Toronto, nope. Nope. The year that like you'd want to go, South Beach and Newport Beach, we're fucking stuck at home. So thank you, coronavirus. So we don't talk a lot of basketball on this show. Mello and I do on our radio show that we do. I cannot stand the hype around LeBron James as a basketball player. Amazing human being. Humanitarian. Awesome. Not a fan of him as a basketball player. So I will be confidently rolling with the Miami Heat. I don't think they win, but I will be rooting my little heart out for them.
I'm with you. I'm going for the Heat as well. We used to call these guys white boy supremes when you'd have that little receiver out there like Cole Beasley that could just go and get the job done. Miami Heat are loaded with them. And I love the way they play basketball, move the ball around, can shoot from the three. I'm rolling with the Heat. I think they do win, and I will be rooting for them.
Yeah, as an East Coaster, we do not root for the Lakers. rooting for the Heat. And the only basketball team, I didn't go to any Knicks games this year. The only basketball game I went to was a Heat game when we were down there for the Super Bowl, Matt. Matt was like, you want to go catch a Heat game? And I'm like, fuck it, why not? Little did I know they'd be in the finals this year.
We're good luck.
So
no stick to football curse in the basketball world. You guys are good luck.
No, if one basketball game a year and that team goes to the finals. So rooting for the Heat and think it's pretty exciting because I don't know. I don't think anyone really expected them to be this, you know, to be in the finals, which is just crazy.
So I'll ask this. None of our teams made the baseball playoffs. Are you guys like rooting for anyone in the baseball playoffs this year?
I root against teams.
Okay. I can respect that.
I root against the Braves. I root against the Yankees. that's where it starts big time. Like, I'm trying to think, who will I root for? I mean, I'll root against the Marlins, even though that sounds so ridiculous when you think
you
about it.
You gotta root against Derek Jeter, though, right?
Yeah, and okay. There any team in the NL East, I'll root against. I hate them all.
So I will root for the Braves.
I don't know.
Not because of Connor. Our mother's father was a Braves fan, and I despise that man, but he made us watch a lot of Braves baseball. So, like, there's a part of me that, like, that's the team I watched most often growing up. And with the Royals out, and then the Nationals are my NL team, they're out. Like, I'm rooting, like Connor said, I'm rooting against the Astros. I hate the Astros so much. But, like, the Braves or Cubs, I'd be cool with.
I'm kind of in the same boat. I am rooting for the Braves. They've always kind of been my NL team, like Matt said, growing up, just watching all those games, fucking Greg Maddux and Chipper Jones. So I'm pulling for the Braves. But I also want to see the Dodgers, like, redeem themselves and get their chance. I want to see Clayton Kershaw in and, like, pitch just lights out in the playoffs. And everybody's like, you know what? This guy is actually really good, and let's appreciate who he is. I am rooting against, like you said, the Astros, also the Cardinals. I can't root for them.
Same.
In the Marlins.
I'm the same way.
How are the Marlins in the playoffs? Like,
I don't know.
Crazy
I have
times.
No explanation for this. Some of their prospects after those 8 million trades finally panned out. I'm glad you brought up the Cardinals, because that's another team that I hate. They, like, ruined my childhood when the 2006 Mets lost on strike three in the playoffs in game seven. So I hate the fucking Cardinals. I hate the Astros. I hate a lot of baseball teams. I like the White Sox a lot. I like the Indians a lot.
Like the Rays, you know, the winning A's. Would just be chaos.
Oh, yeah. I like all those small market teams. Yeah. The Rays, the A's. Yeah, so that's where I'm at.
My childhood wants a throwback of Braves Indians. Like, do you remember, like, those teams were so good in the mid-90s?
Yes.
Yeah, so maybe that's what I'm rooting for. Not the most PC team names, but... would like to see him in the series. Like,
loser has to change their name.
Absolutely not.
Right, there you go.
The AL team versus the NL team.
Yeah, right. Yeah. The Cleveland baseball team against the Atlanta baseball team. Okay, that is our show. We'll be back Thursday. We'll be back Friday. We'll be sitting here Thursday. We'll be back Friday. Blind review and everything you need to know to get ready for the weekend of college football and NFL. For Mel Hope, for Connors, Matt. We'll talk to you guys real soon.